All right, good morning, golfers. Welcome to On Par with Anthony Scorsia. Thank you for listening to Long Island's only golf talk radio show. You're listening to WGBB 1240. Thank you for joining me on this cool, crisp Saturday morning. Looks like it's going to be a beautiful day. Looks like that hot weather, the hot, humid weather has kind of passed us by. So it should be a gorgeous day and a gorgeous rest of the month. Looking forward to talking to Jeff Hall, Managing Director of Rules and Open Championship from the USGA. We're going to be talking a little bit about a little open U.S. Open Championship prep at Shinnecock. So looking forward to that. And just a little quick update on the leaderboard or the web.com tour. Obviously, everybody knows Sam Saunders shot 59 in the first round in the finals and followed up with a 66. And he's got Julian Edelman on his tails, as well as Bronson Bergen and Jonathan Bird, who's a name obviously everybody remembers from the holeout in the playoff in Vegas. But you know, there's quite a few names. You know, people forget how tough golf is and how difficult it is. And when you look down of the leaderboard at the web.com tour championship and you look at some of the names that were once pretty familiar on the PGA tour, names like Hunter Mahan, so to speak, a Ryder Cup player. Golf is difficult at the elite level. And, people, I think, forget about these people that were once regular and regular names and visible on the tour on a regular basis. And, everybody sees, like, jets and a lot of money and the social media with kids, flying around. But, there's another, how the other half lives. And it's very real, and it's you only need a reminder when looking at the web.com tour championship finals. Just look at those names on that leaderboard, and you'll remember it. Ben Crane is also on the outside looking in. So just an interesting perspective when you go through that, look at who's in the top 25 for getting their money, their tour cards. The President's Cup, I don't know really much. Yesterday was a day, that's for sure. And now you look at the early leaderboard, Jordan Spieth and Patrick Reed already one up. Matt Kuchar, Dustin Johnson already one up. Kevin Kisner and Phil Mickelson already one up. So possible they can clinch it today. I probably think that's, unlikely. But, yesterday was quite a day for the United States team. I mean, it was... I couldn't have gone pretty much any worse for the international team. So but fun team golf to watch, and it's fun to see, although it wasn't fun to see Mickelson do his little Three Amigo dance with Kevin Kisner. So that might have been, if you see any replays, avert your eyes, because that wasn't pretty at all. But we're going to get to our first break. We'll be back with the Managing Director of Rules and Open Championship from the USGA, Jeff Hall. You're listening to Long Island's only golf talk radio show. You're listening to On Par with Anthony Scorsia.
The Long Island Golf Association is a nonprofit organization of 81 private and public clubs. The LIGA conducts 15 championships annually and works closely with the Long Island Caddy Scholarship Fund. The scholarships are granted to young men and women who are employed at member clubs. For more information on how you can participate in a championship, or if you'd like to donate your time as a volunteer, please call the LIGA at 516-746-1015. That's 516-746-1015. 1015, or visit us at www.longislandgolf.org.
Pete's Golf. Since 1979, Pete's Golf has been practicing the art of club fitting and has been selected as a top 100 club fitter by Golf Digest magazine. At Pete's Golf, we use the best technology available to create an exceptional fitting experience for every customer that walks into our store. Visit petesgolf.com or call 516-248-6891. That's 516-248-6891, and get your next set of clubs fit for you.
All right, welcome back to On Par with Anthony Scorsia. Pleased to be joined by Managing Director of Rules and Open Championship, Jeff Hall. Jeff, how are you doing this morning?
Good morning, Anthony. I'm doing very well, thank you. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, no, I appreciate you taking the time out of your schedule to get up this morning. I'm sure you've already been up and at them, but I appreciate you taking the time to join me to talk a little bit about the U.S. Open prep, and it should be a lot of fun.
Absolutely. We're very excited to get back to Shinnecock Hills certainly one of our iconic U.S. Open venues and one of the founding clubs of the USGA. So a lot of history there to return to.
Before we get to before we dig a little deeper on that, on the prep, I wanted to talk, well, one, about you a little bit, just in the sense of your journey. You went to school in Alabama and then went and then you were you know, in charge of the tournament director at the Met PGA. How did you find your way to the Met PGA?
Well, I grew up in Connecticut, Anthony, and when I was home from Alabama, I went to a little school called Huntingdon College in Montgomery.
Yep.
When I was home in the summer, I worked for Randy Cavanaugh out at Rockaway Hunt Club on Long Island.
Sure.
And met Charlie through various Met section events, Charlie Robson through various Met section events, whether I was maybe caddying for Randy or we hosted the Assistance Championship when I was at Rockaway Hunt one time. And finished up with school, kind of trying to, you know, like a lot of graduates, trying to figure out what it is they want to do. I thought I was going to be the next Nicklaus. That didn't pan out.
Well, you weren't alone in that.
Well, yeah, it didn't make me unique, did it? I went to work for my dad in the real estate business, and I really did not enjoy that.
Yep.
And so one summer, I worked for Charlie as just kind of a tournament gopher. And, you know, I was working hard to remember that red was lateral and yellow was a regular water hazard. But I started to really get an interest in the rules. And in the midst of my horrible real estate career, I called Charlie and said, hey, listen, if you're looking for another, you know, tournament gopher this summer, I'd love to get involved. And he said, well, geez, we're looking to hire a full-time tournament director. Are you interested? And one thing led to another. And I worked for a year and a half for the Met section, and I just completed my 27th year with the USGA.
What was it about the, not just the about golf in general, but about doing that and being part of that, that appealed to you so much?
Well, it's hard to ignore the golf part of it. As I said, I'd known nothing but golf through high school and college. And, you know, I thought I might be a club professional, but then I felt like maybe I would be just a frustrated player,
mm-hmm.
Wanting to play and not really be in the business for the right reasons.
Right.
And truthfully, didn't even realize this golf administration was a career. And, you know, it's kept me around golf at the highest level. You know, I've had some days that are a little more trying than others in my 27 years with the USGA.
Sure.
But I've never had a bad day with the USGA. And, so I love what I do, and it just makes all, as you know, that just makes all the difference in the world.
Yep. You love what you do. You never work a day in your life. And of course, there's always going to be difficulties and challenges. You know, it's just, but I think it's an important message that you touch upon, that, you know, there's just, you have to do things for the right reasons. And if you don't do them for the right reasons, nobody wins, really, you know, not the clients, not yourself. It's really
family
important.
Struggles. If you're bringing the office home every night and you're disappointed about it, that's not healthy for your family either. So my family has put up with a lot to allow me to kind of enjoy my career. I mean, I've been, you know, well provided for with the USGA, but again, you know, you miss a lot of things with the travel, wouldn't really change much about it. It's been a great ride for some kid from Milford, Connecticut, to go where I've gone because of this little 1.68-inch white golf ball is pretty amazing.
Yeah, I was just going to say, you've probably, you know, the places you've traveled and the things that you've seen, could you have even imagined being, you know, around the world, really, basically, based on just one, you know, just because you love this golf administrative part of the job? It's been an amazing run to this point.
Oh, it has, from, you know, 30 minutes in the Oval Office to, you know, Tokyo, Japan, to all throughout the British Isles. Now, listen, not playing golf every place you go. As you know, once you get in the golf business, you don't play a whole lot of golf.
Nope, you don't.
But that said, and for your listeners, I grew up on you know, public golf courses, D. Fairchild Wheeler, the Wheel.
Yep.
Up in Bridgeport, and kind of graduated to Grassy Hill Country Club, kind of a very low end private club in Connecticut. So I've logged my miles on crabgrass. But when I do play now, I'm fortunate to play a lot of nice places. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, I would say that's putting it mildly. But you know, you've earned it in the service that you've given to the game too. So there's that as well. Your favorite place that you've been to, some of the more fun, interesting places that maybe that you didn't think you'd find interesting, but were really surprised by in your travels.
Oh boy, that's a good question. You know, we're always talking about golf experiences, and I think one of the most fun golf courses, one of those golf courses that I would call, okay, you get one golf course the rest of your life to play the rest of your golf on, right out on Long Island, National Golf Links of America.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
It has so many different presentations, you know, hourly based on the weather and everything else. It's just one of those fun golf courses where, you know, the elite player is challenged. We had the Walker Cup there in 2013.
Yep.
And the average guy's got a chance. And I can assure you I'm far closer to the average guy than the elite player anymore. So
yep.
That's a fun spot. Had the chance when we were up at Erin Hills this year doing some work to get up to Sand Valley, a new golf course that Michael Kaiser has opened.
Yep.
The Coore Crenshaw course there. My kind of golf, really wide. You don't miss fairways. You play it on the ground. The ball runs out, which is a positive.
Yep.
Just a lot of fun. I love playing golf in the United Kingdom. It's just a fun way to play golf. You've got to be creative. It's not just an aerial game. You can chase balls around on the ground. Listen, at this point in my life, any time on the golf course is wonderful because the cell phone's not ringing, or it may be ringing, but I'm not listening to it ring. So that's a positive.
Yeah. No, I agree. And I agree with you on I think the ground game is just so much more fun. And, you know, I've been fortunate enough to play in Ireland, and I loved it there. I've been fortunate enough to play at National Golf Links and was there at the Walker Cup and got to watch, you know, Justin, you know, Justin Thomas, you know, all these guys, you know, just that are playing in the President's Cup now. And, you know, just, you know, so it's a fun, it's an absolutely gorgeous golf course and absolutely a pleasure to play because you're always sort of, for the most part, like you're saying, you're always in play. And I think that's the fun part of golf.
Yeah, and you have a chance to hit some different kinds of shots. You know, that the number is not that important. You're 150. Well, okay, it could be a, you know, if you are hitting a 7-iron from 150 yards, it could be a pitching wedge one day, and it could be a 4-iron the next day.
Yep.
Just based on the weather. So now it's a wonderful game, and
yep.
certainly enjoy the opportunity to get out there and to be able to work in the business is just a real treat.
Yep. Well, I want to talk about Nationals' neighbor, one that you're very familiar with, but I want to get to my next break so we can just sort of concentrate on that. You're listening to On Par with Anthony Scorsia.
Play like a pro with a custom set of PXG clubs in your bag. Designed to deliver unrivaled performance and fitted to optimize your game, PXG clubs will help you unlock your true potential. We guarantee you've never played like this before. Get fitted for PXG clubs at Pete's Golf Shop today.
Founded in the early 1990s, Tri-State Turfgrass Research Foundation exists to improve golf course conditions throughout the Tri-State area, positively impacting millions of golfers each year. The foundation identifies key turfgrass problems, solicits donations, and works with university professors to solve these problems through integrated pest management. Since its inception, Tri-State has raised $1.1 million for turfgrass research. We would like to thank the Long Island Golf Course Superintendents Association for their continued support. If you would like to make a donation, visit tristateturf.org. Once again, that's tristateturf.org.
All right, welcome back to On Par with Anthony Scorsia, speaking with tournament director, managing director, excuse me, of Rules and Open Championship, Jeff Hall, the USGA. We were just talking about National, and now we're moving across to our neighbor and now US Open site in Shinnecock, a special place, obviously. with a long history of championship golf. And so I don't think anybody could be more excited. I think that Long Island is excited for this. I think the game, people who are fans of golf are excited for Shinnecock. And your responsibility is a sort of inside the rope strategy. Can you talk a little bit about what that entails?
Sure, Anthony. As you know, Mike Davis is our lead with respect to setup of the golf course. But if you roll the clock back a few years, when Mike took over the leadership of the Rules and Competitions Department back in the fall of 2005, mm-hmm. He asked me to kind of serve as his number two with respect to the U.S. Open. So I did just that, helping him with setup, the conduct of the competition from a rules standpoint, working with our operations team to make sure that all the construction that has to happen out on the golf courses, those grandstands, the TV towers and all are going in the right spot, working through groupings and starting times, working through things with television, et cetera. When Mike became executive director, he only held on to the golf course setup piece and the conduct of the U.S. Open inside the ropes. Again, from that rules, dealing with weather, et cetera, it falls to my into my lap. Of course, I've got a great team that I work with in executing all that, but still work very, very closely with Mike on the setup portion of the championship, and have been doing that since 2006. So we've been very active out at Shinnecock, had a lot of visits there the last couple years, recently done some work out there to get things ready for the U.S. Open, and we're very excited to come back and showcase Shinnecock Hills Golf Club since the 2004 U.S. Open there.
Can you talk a little bit about the sort of transformation that's been going on? I know they had been going through their own little transformation, but can you tell us for people who haven't seen it since 2004, what might they expect to see?
Sure. In 2012, the club went through a restoration of the William Flynn masterpiece that is Shinnecock Hills, and to really restore the Flynn's basic principles of a wider golf course, very strategic. Even though it's wide under the Flynn design, it was still very strategic. It wasn't just good enough, again, for the elite player to hit fairways. You have to be in the right place in the fairway to take on a particular hole location.
Sure.
So really trying to connect the dots. As we evaluated the work that was done, which was fantastic, it just needed a little bit of tightening, if you will, to provide the appropriate, as we refer to it, the ultimate test of a U.S. Open golf course. So in the last couple of weeks, we've worked very cooperatively with Shinnecock Hills on a plan that was developed through the summer relative to tightening things and bringing in the rough on a number of holes. But I should say this, while it's tighter than post-restoration that the membership experienced, it will still be the widest U.S. Open we've played at Shinnecock Hills as compared to 1986, 95, and 2004. So what we noticed with the width of the golf course from those three opens was it was a bit inconsistent with the strategy component that William Flynn designed into the golf course. So we're trying to be true to both the modern U.S. Open, if you will, and the genius of the Flynn design. And I think we've got to a very good place in that regard.
And did you, has it been some green expansion? I would assume there would be then, to make, if you're going to increase the angles, then you might have to increase the size of the greens for more pin placement. So I shouldn't say did you, but did the membership?
The restoration certainly addressed that issue as well. It added about 400 yards, a little over 400 yards to the golf course. And again, that's certainly primarily a U.S. Open feature, although I'm sure the club uses it as well at times.
Yep.
And yes, there were some green expansions both in some of the closely mown areas around the greens and restoring some of that, as well as restoring some expansions of the putting greens, which, you know, is a very natural phenomenon at every golf course, where over time mowing patterns change ever so slightly. And you might, you know, somebody who's mowing that green on that cleanup pass doesn't want to scalp the fringe, so you miss a little bit on the inside. And, you know, if you miss a little bit on the inside over 10 years, that green's going to shrink.
Sure.
And all of a sudden, the edge of the green is a bit further away than the from bunkers. And so anyway, they did a wonderful job in, again, being true to the Flynn design. And I'm not sure that any of the putting green expansions will let us put a hole location in the newly expanded area.
Okay.
But it will let us put a hole location where we couldn't, because now we do have putting greens that we're not too close to the edge, if you will.
Right, right. And around... But, oh, go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, they've really done just a wonderful job making sure that a number of the greenside bunkers are not covered up by rough, where balls can actually, because of the topography and the slope that's within the putting greens, you know, the ball will... Gravity wins every time, and if that ball's got a little momentum, gravity will pull that ball down into some of the bunkers as opposed to being held up by rough grass.
What about around the greens? Is there going to be, you mentioned obviously there's going to be turf rolling it, so the ball could roll into the bunkers, but around the greens, and is there going to be a lot of opportunities for creativity, if you will, as opposed to rough, you know, runoffs and whatnot?
I think that's exactly what you'll see. You could have some golf balls from, you know, two or three players end up within a yard or two of each other and watch them execute different strokes, you know, different types of strokes, different methodology to try to get the ball up and down. You know, somebody might want to putt it. Somebody might want to bump and run it. Somebody might want to pitch it. Somebody might use a hybrid and just kind of chase it along the ground. And that's really, I think that's really pretty neat. This ultimate test of golf that we're trying to present, you know, this narrowing of the golf course, we want to make sure that accuracy is a key component to that ultimate test. And then when we get around the greens, giving players options sometimes can be more challenging, even for the best players in the world, because perhaps they're not 100% committed to just the type of shot they want to play, whereas if it's just, you know, tall rough, there's not a lot of creativity involved in the next shot. It's more of a bunker shot type of execution, and you know, there you have it. But you will see at some around some of these greens closely mown, and then there'll be some greens where that fescue rough is going to be relatively near. So there's some variety based on the architecture that's presented. We want to really, again, be true to the architecture that is there, the William Flynn design, and yet still provide that ultimate test of golf for the best players in the world.
You know, what I love about the runoff is not only that in those areas, those closely mown areas, is that around the greens. And like you said, I mean, I think there's a place for, you know, for having longer rough, if you will, next to the green. Like you said, if that's part of the design. But with the other part of the closely mown areas where people have different options, is it also, it's another part of the test, I think, that people sort of overlook. Not that the people have... not just the creativity part of it, testing the one's nature to try something that maybe other people aren't seeing or will see. I know Justin Thomas did that yesterday in the President's Cup, right? There was that there was a chip on, he was long on the par three, I believe it was, and ran it along the ground, and nobody, not even the person calling the action, saw that shot. In fact, they said, you know, it's going to be go. You know, he's on the short side, and it's going to land near the green. It's going to, you know, he has a chance of going in the water, and he ran it along the green and hit it to within 10 feet. And I think, but one of the things that tests, and I, you know, the USGA is always looking to test all aspects, and that's the mental part of it. And that, like you said, you have to be, if you're going to try something different and run it along the ground or whatever, you still have to commit to that shot. You know, this is the U.S. Open. Every shot counts, but it's a high pressure situation, and you have to execute that shot that you're trying to play. So that's all part of the test.
Absolutely, and again, as we refer to this ultimate test, each golf course brings its own unique elements to that table. The perfect case in point, in 2020, we'll be contesting the U.S. Open at Wingfoot. Well, there are not a lot of runoff areas at Wingfoot. It is healthy, rough around the greens. That's what the Tillinghast design was all about. We want to be true to that. At the end of the day, we are a guest at these venues that so graciously invite us to contest the U.S. Open or all of our championships across the USGA spectrum. And we want to really, our job is to showcase the golf course that we are invited to contest that championship at the highest level, agronomically, strategically, all of those components. That's really what makes up the ultimate test. There's a shot-making component. Can you deal with wind? Can you hit it up? Can you hit it down? Can you hit it left? Can you hit it right? Can you manage the kind of connecting the dots, the strategic part of it, your course management skills, the patience required to typically succeed in the U.S. Open, and then just the mental and the physical challenge of the U.S. Open. There's a lot wearing on these players at the United States Open, and when they get their hands on that trophy Sunday night, I think everybody realizes they've accomplished something, and we're happy to be a part of that whole process.
Absolutely, and it will be the ultimate test. I mean, that just the nature of the golf course in itself is, I mean, only when you can count on one hand basically how many people have broken par in the modern Open, it tells you all you really need to know about that golf course. It's a difficult test.
And the one thing we haven't even really hinted on is that the natural setting of Shinnecock Hills,
sure,
the rolling landscape. It's a windswept landscape, and we certainly know the predictability of weather on the east end of Long Island in June is anything but predictable. It's completely unpredictable.
Yep.
I think back to Thursday in 1986. I was working at Rockaway Hunt at the time and watching on television, and that brutal day, that first day where Bob Tway was leading at either even or maybe even over par after the first, but the weather was brutal, and I think that's what you can expect at Shinnecock in June. You know that Mother Nature is going to get a seat at the table, and the players, as good as they are, and technology and all of that, the wind is that kind of invisible hazard out there to the players, where it's not just physical execution, but there's a mental commitment to different shots that have to be played.
Absolutely. And Jeff, I want to thank you for joining me this morning, and I hope when June comes around that we'll get a chance to chat on site. But it's been a pleasure to have you on the program. Thank you for joining me.
Thanks, Anthony, and appreciate your support. Have a great week.
Yep, you as well. Take care. All right, that was Jeff Hall, Managing Director of Rules and Open Championship. That's all the time we have, folks, this week. You're listening to On Par with Anthony Scorsia. Have a great week.